in front of me is the possible Sir Noel Fitzpatrick. I've heard the phrase. Okay, I'll tell you about it. Okay, people are going to go, who the hell is he talking about? Because in the papers this morning, Daniel Day-Lewis is there, and he's now Sir Daniel Day-Lewis. Why aren't you, sir?
Shut up.
I'm not even going to let you get a word in edgeways. Basically, if you're an animal lover, good chance you probably caught some of the hit Channel 4 TV show, The Super Vet. It centres around the Irishman here in front of me. His name is Noel Fitzpatrick, and his neurosurgery and orthopaedic centre, it's the Fitzpatrick Referrals in Surrey in England. The show pulls in millions of viewers whenever it airs, and Noel himself has been a star over the last while since that, and since the BBC one, of course, that before that as well, and an idol for animal lovers who tune in to see him and his team attempt to heal some of Britain's hardest to cure pets with his pioneering techniques and inventions. They're my words. Now, he has made a flying visit to Dublin this weekend. Very lucky he's dropped in here for a quick chat. So Noel, let's just first of all put you into some kind of perspective. By the way, if anybody has a sick dog, 51552.
Yeah, let's get him on air now.
I put him on the spot.
Good morning, Dave.
Listen,
how are you?
I'm very good indeed. A small village in Laois, one of Britain's leading veterinary surgeons, if not the leading one, certainly the most famous. How did it happen, the journey? You've got 20 seconds.
I ended up in West Cork with a cow pooping on my head, and I felt this isn't the way to go. That's it, 9 seconds.
So you went from Laois to West Cork?
Yeah, I did. You know, and I grew up on a farm in Ireland, in Ballyfin, in County Laois, and animals were my best friend. And I just thought somebody kind of needs to recognise that they have as much a right to the planet as we have. And I was very close to them. I was weird because I talked to them, and, you know, I was more close to them than I was to human beings, probably still am today. And the reality then for me was just to find my path. So I started out there, went to West Cork, beautiful spot, but, you know, calving cows in the middle of the night and going out to cottages with no electricity and doing cow cesareans in the middle of a yard and doing operations on a farmer's table. And then just went to London, and I guess the rest is history.
Okay, but before London, you did go to study veterinary thingamabob in UCD. And also when you say there, animal's best friend in Laois, can I go as far as to say that the times might have been tough with contemporaries in terms of, use the word bullying?
Yeah. No, I don't mind you hitting that one hard. I have a great deal of personal pain inside from a moment when things were not so good. And I would say to anybody that's in school and feels like a bit of a freak and you don't know who to turn to and you're talking to yourself, that life is a strange place to be sometimes. And the people who don't want to look in the mirror, they're the bullies. So they don't like you being different. I get this even now with Super Vet. It's very polarizing. You know, they like it or they hate it. But bullying was a reality of every day. And the hardest thing for people is not the physical bullying, because you can take endless pummeling. But mentally, if people are trying to erode you inside, that's a real hard issue. And I would say that's a real shame that happens, but most of the time it's because those people can't look themselves in the mirror.
Okay, well then pretty early on, animals became your best friends, and it's now a vocation with what you've done, but very few people have the wherewithal or have the drive to go from really believing in something and taking it 100% all the way. You've gone past any kind of last lamppost. You're there further all the way along.
Yeah, I do like to provide all of the options, but people forget. I mean, the purpose of making the TV show was we wanted to make a journey of unconditional love and hope and redemption through medical science.
This is the current series,
and I wanted to make a show, and I went to the television company and said, I want to make a show about love, and they're like, oh no, this is science, this is a veterinary show. No, it's not. It's about Mary in Killarney who has a companion that happens to be a dog or a cat rather than a human being. Why is that journey important, Dev? Yeah. Why is it important in society nowadays, you know, when we're urbanized and so on, and community spirit sometimes is lacking? Why is it important, that companion? And I wanted to make a story as well about why animals for 250 years served humans with implants and drugs and everything else that you have, and they weren't getting it back. So I wanted to pull both of those strands together. And I did want to thank you, actually. I did want to thank you because genuinely, seriously, this is true. You're responsible for two things in my life. You talk about inspiration. You're probably the reason I'm not married, actually. Because you probably are. Because I'll tell you why. Your show used to be on when I was in college, and I was not a bright student, and I was studying pathophysiology, and I couldn't get it. Played your music show, and then there was a girl I kind of fancied, you know, and I said, look, you have to leave now because Dave Fanning's show is coming on. And she thought you were actually more of a symptom of me not having a girlfriend than my actual study.
You're even sadder than I thought.
Yes, I know. But to come back to the point, I think that is important in the world, and that's the reason the show resonates. The reason the show resonates with people is that that there are things in everybody's life that are vulnerable and raw. And I don't care whether you're the commander-in-chief of an army going into Iraq, as I've had, or Joe from down the pub. If you have a relationship with an animal, you're exposed raw in that moment in time in my office with me holding your hand. And it's not all about miracles. Sometimes it's just holding your hand and saying, you got to let go. You got to let Freddie go.
You know, funny thing is, Graham Norton was on the Late last week talking to Ryan, and he was just saying straight out, he said, look, what is this thing about my dogs being my surrogate kids and that? They're not. Like, these are my dogs. How dare you even have to put them into the same category or something like that? Like, this is the big thing. And I would imagine, going one step further, that really when it comes to animals and people, animals are much better things in the world than people for you, are they?
Oh, much better. I mean, they're sentient. They have feelings, you know. And for me, looking after that little bit of the world is immensely rewarding. But, you know, Dave, it's not all a bed of roses. I was very upset yesterday, and I'll just share this with you because it's important. Yesterday afternoon, I was flying in to do a thing at UCD last night, and I was really upset because there's a lady whose dog we put to sleep, and she is extraordinarily upset with us, even though we've done our very best. So the reality of trying to save life and look after love is that you face humanity at its most raw and most vulnerable and most exposed. And you shouldn't anthropomorphize and call them your children or your whatever.
Exactly.
Because it's a type of love that's different to that. But it's sometimes so upsetting for people that they lash out. But most of the time, it's just they want you to hold them in that moment that they feel that vulnerable. And I do still take it very personally. You know, people think, oh, you're a vet, you're charging XYZ to do an operation. Honestly, I could care less. It makes no difference to my life. I do hope, though, that the people there's somebody in somewhere in Ireland listening to this, or maybe in Ballyfin, in County Laois, listening to this now, who's maybe a little bit lonely, maybe they're going through a divorce, maybe they have fallen out with their boss, whatever it is, and they realise, you know what? There is a little ray of light, and there is something important that's being looked after here and cherished in a world that sometimes doesn't really understand or care about vulnerability in the way you should. Because most people who are vulnerable, whether you've got cancer or whether whatever it is, you just want someone to hold your hand.
Okay, well, look, just what you are and what you've done, for those not in the know necessarily, I mean, like, you have over 120 people or thereabouts working with you, all vetted by you, I've heard.
Yeah, vetted, yeah.
Oh, sorry, vetted.
You'll notice vetted is different than to doctor. To doctor something has a bad connotation. To vet something is really positive. Right. How lucky are vets?
I didn't realize.
There's 137 of them.
Lucky enough in some ways, but having said that, like, every single thing that any human has ever taken has been tested on an animal.
That's right.
Okay, so in which case, you're saying earlier, wrong, we owe animals and the animal kingdom and the animal world so much more than we ever give them back.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, but having said that, like the animals themselves, the stuff that you've done there from joint replacement techniques and prosthetics and spinal disc replacement and all the things that you've done and all the things that you have pioneered and done for the first time, if you like, that if you've done 20 things that have never been done anywhere else in the world and have proved to be so successful, isn't it only a matter of time before, long after you're dead maybe, that this is the great work done back in 2004? That it'll all be done on humans.
I saw a poster on the way in, an Oscar Wilde poster, and I felt similar. He in his lifetime was never respected as much as I do feel like that.
Because
after you try and influence things that way, people will be polarized. You're quite right. So I'll give you an exact example to make this tangible for everybody to listen to it. So imagine that you've had your arm chopped off. The holy grail has been to get a piece of metal that your bone and your skin would grow into, and you could attach a bionic leg, for example, right? Now, to my knowledge, nobody in the Republic of Ireland has an actually fully integrated bionic limb. Now, we've been doing this for 8 years in dogs and cats and making it work. And we're on the verge of launching a non-for-profit organization to try and bring it into the bigger world. But here's the thing. You said it's only a matter of time. I'll tell you what, Dave, it's not just only a matter of time. Ego, money, and power get in the way, usually money. Because people need to make, companies want to make 20 million or 20 billion out of whatever. And I want to say, you know what? This is all possible now. Wake up and smell the coffee. It's quicker and easier to move veterinary medicine and human medicine together. Everyone's a winner. The animal's a winner, the human's a winner, and we should do that. But the reason it doesn't happen is just because of the previous paradigm of animals were there to serve humans.
Right, and also, by the way, when you're giving out about pharmaceutical companies, which you veiledly are there, or most directly are, whatever, in the middle come the doctors. You're a vet, they're the doctors. I would say the doctors never open their doors to you.
No, you're quite right, and I love medicine. I think all doctors mean well. I really do. But the problem is that I need in my lifetime, I've got X number of years left. If I'm lucky, I might die next year. But the point is, at some point in the evolution of the earth, doctors have to realize there's not an endless number of animals to exploit. When I turn up at human medical conferences in America or here or Australia, wherever it is, I'm the novelty act at the end. Oh, here's the vet. Yeah. He's coming along. Yeah. And then they forget to realize that actually your knee replacement was done on a dog in upstate New York in 1977, and dogs never got it. And what I'm saying to you is, hang on a minute. The world is a finite resource, and if we could move these two things in parallel and have some kind of respect, some kind of two-way street, that would be better. But usually the blockage is both a lack of sensibility to the possibilities, because clinical veterinary practice and human practice moving forward together has never been done before. We've set up a charity called the Human Animal Trust that I think I should talk about on national radio, because it's to do exactly that. Move the two things forward together, everyone wins. But you're quite right, it's going to take a seismic shift in medical opinion to actually embrace that idea, because it's a whole new idea. And it's so obvious. It's as obvious as cat's eyes on the side of the road. When it's there in 25 years from now, if I'm long dead, people will say, oh yeah, that was a good idea. Because it's obvious.
Right. Okay. Look, by the way, we're talking to Noah Fitzpatrick here, super vet. I think that's a good statement of intent there. 51552 is our text, and at Dave Fanning shows the Twitter address. It's now 10:15. My Jack Russell. You see, I knew these were going to come in. Here's one. My Jack Russell had a disc removed from his spine in December last year. I wonder, does that come in from Mrs. Russell? Anyway, and he still hasn't got great movement in his back left leg, and he cannot or will not climb stairs. Is there a chance he is still in pain?
No. Well, usually, and that's right. So let me explain. This could get very scientific, but let's not. So your little Jack Russell had a disc removed. Basically, he didn't have the disc removed. He had the center, the pulpy center of the disc removed. A disc is like a jam donut. It explodes. It hits the cord. People have a misconception about spinal cord injuries in humans as well. And there's all this debate about stem cells at the moment. It was in the press recently. He's probably not in pain, but what he probably is, his spinal cord was hit like a bullet, with that disc exploding and the spinal cord hasn't recovered. But here's the thing, Dave, right? That Jack Russell, right now, I think next week, we're doing a stem cell injection that may or may not help a clinical case. But the reality is that dog is going to be paralyzed or not. And it has no choice. It's going to be paralyzed or it's going to be dead. So if we move that forward, let's say with this lady's Jack Russell, because the dog has no choice, why would we not want humanity and all other animals to benefit from that? Well, we would, wouldn't we? You know? And for me, it's a no-brainer. So we should be looking after her Jack Russell. And if by doing so, we make discoveries, let's share them fairly quickly.
Yeah. Your place in Surrey is like world-renowned, and the whole world is looking at it in terms of, is this the future already here kind of thing? And there's a responsibility that you have with all of this. There's no question about it. But are you like deliberately trying to break boundaries and realise that this is the only way forward, and let's do what should be done, what's going to be done in 40 years' time, let's do it now?
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword. Some people think you're a god and some people think you're the devil.
Yeah.
And honestly, you walk that tightrope perilously every day. And I get an equal number of people who are cynical about it and think, oh, you're doing it for ego and all of that stuff. And that's up to you. That's your opinion. Great. Good luck to you. But people, I do want to tell you about this, because I learned this in bullying. People will find, if they want to dislike you, they'll find a reason to dislike you more long after you've moved their previous reason to dislike you. But 98% of people are not like that. So yes, I am here to throw a big pebble in the pond. The ripple effect of that will be felt for many, many years to come. You and I were talking about Phil Lynott earlier.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, music heroes like that, or like Jim Kerr or Bono, those are my three music idols that you introduced me to. Mm-hmm. They threw a pebble in the pond of social experience, and I'm trying to do the same in veterinary medicine. People don't see yet what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is look after the only thing that's important on earth, and that is something to love, something to look after to, and to give back to you. That's it. And health. So that's it. I guess the two most important things.
Okay, but in terms of the stuff that people see on the TV program, the Super Vet, the current TV program, that is, not the, there was the BBC one, wasn't there? The Bionic Vet. So 6 million viewers were watching that one.
Yeah.
So the, what they see is they see what you do and they see how futuristic it is. There's a tomorrow's world aspect of that whole place in Surrey. The point of it is, what's more important to you, the gadgets or the people?
The people by a million miles. Every single one of those 137 people I have interviewed personally and have hired for the size of their heads.
Yeah,
and
by the way, he had to hire one that he wanted so badly. He lost the biggest thing in his life.
Oh, you know that?
It's my Aston Martin or it's this person. And you got rid of the Aston Martin.
I meant
Martin.
To say I hired
it. It wasn't a DB5.
No. That's right.
An ejector
seat, Susan.
No?
And she's Irish as well. And she'll be mortified that I'm saying this national radio. I hire people for the size of their hearts, not the size of their heads, which is what I was going to say. And to me, that's way more important. Yeah. I ran out of money. I'd borrowed several million quid and I had one possession. That was the Aston Martin. And I sold it because I needed a colleague. And you know what? She's worth 50 Aston Martins. It's the truth. I could care less.
All right, good enough. In terms of what she does and the work she does. By the way, we're talking here just very quickly to Noel Fitzpatrick. 51552 is our text. There's one there. It says, 15-year-old dog doesn't seem to know us. Not sleeping at night. Agitated, incontinent. Are we being cruel keeping her alive?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question because...
And by the way, I presume you'd also be saying that, you know, putting them down, sorry to use that phrase suddenly with that text there, is a weapon of last resort always for you?
No. Actually, surprisingly, it's not. Right. Interestingly, a lot of people think that because they think we walk on water and provide miracles, they don't see all of the dogs and cats that come to us that we do put down. And I tell you, I want Channel 4 to listen up because I want them to put euthanasia and put the case that fails on television. But because it's 8 to 9 p.m. at night, there's kids watching it. They don't want to give them sadness. That's real life. You know, that is real life. Usually, it's me holding their hand saying, it's time to put Freddie to sleep. So in the case of your dog, yes, there's absolutely a time to put that animal down. And veterinary, the profession, are the gatekeepers of life and death, which the human profession are not. And let me tell you this. It used to be, the line in the sand used to be what's possible and what's not possible. Now nearly everything's possible, so the line in the sand is what's morally right. And the answer to the question is, if the dog has no quality of life, the dog needs to have its paw held and to be let go peacefully. And I do that all the time. In fact, and I want the program to reflect that, actually. I don't want it to just reflect success because that's not real life. And there is success in death because we're all passing through. It's how you deal with that. Dave, you and I are going to die. That's the way it is. And we just need to accept that and be there for each other while we're having some time on earth. And that dog, it's 15. It's got less than a year left. Anyway, probably.
Yeah. Does all the publicity that you have now, as to does that help in terms of what's happening in Surrey, in terms of the place you are? For instance, like even like the famous people that bring stuff, like everybody from Chris Evans to Michael Ball, they all brought their dogs there and do bring their dogs there, etc. And like we're talking cartilage transplants and cancer prosthetics and limb salvage surgery that'll go on for the future for humans too. The whole focus is on what you do there. Has it been good? Like are they flying across from the US?
They are. But again, it's a double-edged sword. I get a lot of crap from, I'm allowed to say crap on national radio. From some people who say, oh, well, you only treat people who have money or celebrities or whatever. That's total nonsense. Mm. Actually, it's usually Mary from the local, you know, from a village 20 miles away, and she loves her dog. The uniting influence of all of these people, the uniting thing they have in common is they love their dog or their cat. Has it changed things? The only thing it's changed, Dave, is it's given me a platform to come and talk to you. And the only way I can change things and make people realize that we, and I know I'm digressing from your question, but this is the reason I'm on Earth. We're destroying species after species of animal, human beings. And we will regret it as a civilization. In the next lifetime, we have the ability to absolutely change medicine forever because we can build a cybergenic human for the first time. And we have the ability to eradicate species on the planet that we'll never get back. And I'm here to say, as a veterinary surgeon, that we are the gatekeepers of that life on Earth. And that's our moral responsibility. I don't care whether it's Michael Ball or Chris Evans or Joe from Tesco stacking shelves. My job is to look after that animal. And that story, that animal in that family, if we could bottle that love, we would look after the species on Earth better. And that's the point of the show.
All right, 51552, by the way, there's one here that says, I just wanted to say hello. I watch your show every week and I religiously cry every week. You are the man. You cried now and again too, and Mojo, was it Mojo?
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for noticing. it's raw.
Yeah.
It's raw. It's not made up stuff. You know, this is the way it is. You know, and if I'm having a bad day, that's the way it is. And I don't tell Philip or Chris to turn off the camera, because I know that if I'm talking to you and you for 1 second doubt the integrity that's presented with, then I may as well give up. What's the point in that? Just sitting in a green room, being a celebrity? What the hell is... There's no point in that for me.
Okay, by the way, just to make a funny little aside here, Keira Knightley, by the way, is married, so tough.
I know.
That's the end
what
of that
disaster,
for you.
My dog.
Having said that, can you tell an awful lot about couples when they come in with an
animal?
Let me tell you
the worst ever divorce I saw happen on the spot. So a guy came in with his West Highland White Terrier, and he's standing there looking really, you know, the dog's puking, the dog's vomiting, and the woman there, I don't know why, my dog is vomiting. And I said, well, look, we'll have to make him bring up whatever's making him vomit. So I gave the dog something, and the dog brought up a red suspender belt there and then. And she looked at her husband and said, that's not mine, George. So you can tell a lot about a couple, but you can tell
George
the couple
slunk to the floor.
Yeah, he slunk to the floor.
Word, did he?
But the point is, you can tell a lot about when people are exposed vulnerable. You can tell the couples that are genuinely going to stay together. I would say I've got a 98% success rate in marriage guidance counselling, even though I'm not married.
No,
seriously, no.
No, I'm damn sure.
Surprisingly.
Listen, the surgeries, the procedures that you carry out, they're not typical day-to-day events in a vet's place. And that, are there a lot of other vetty kind of stuff that you're doing that doesn't necessarily look like brilliant television?
Yeah.
Normal vet stuff.
Routine. Last night I was operating, the night before last, Thursday night, I was operating on I was doing a cat total hip replacement at midnight, because we'd had three routine things come in before that I needed to cut. Most of it, 90% of it's routine. The stuff that you see on the telly, you know, that has a story with it, and so on, and then it can be told on the telly.
Exactly, yeah.
But 90% of it is routine stuff that you're just fixing an animal, making their life better. And that's it. It doesn't matter whether it's just a pain in the paw or a spinal disc replacement. You're just making that animal's life better and making that family feel that they're looking after their friend. That's all you're doing. You're just providing all of the options all of the time for that animal.
Right.
And in Ireland, that's an important message, because for many, many, many decades in Ireland, and I grew up on a farm, animals are very functional, much more so than in the UK, for example, where urban society has grown quicker and people have more companion animal vested in their culture.
You mean like the use of animals? It's not as though Irish farm animals are more intelligent than English farm animals.
No. What I mean is there's a more, like, I grew up on a farm, so there's a more functional attitude.
Okay, like when we're talking limbs and paws and hips and knees and spines, which is what you do all that of, just to get back to something you mentioned earlier on, the difficulty of telling a mother or a father or both, but the kid there as well.
Yeah.
Actually, there is only one solution here.
Yeah.
The humane solution.
Yeah, and I had my very first experience of that in West Cork, actually. I had a little boy who had adopted a rabbit from the wild, and he had this rabbit for 4 years, and the rabbit got mixed with horses and needed to die. And this is a very important story that stuck with me forever. I sat on the side of a hill in West Cork with this kid, and he said, "Mister, I don't know what to do. You know, I can't let my friend go." And I said, "You have to." And I said to him, "Look at that mountain over there. Do you really think there's nothing the other side of that mountain?" He said, "Of course there is, mister. There's a Skibbereen." And I'm like, "Absolutely. So do you think there's nothing the other side of this?" And he said, "Of course there is, mister. There's stuff after it." And I said, "Exactly. We're all passing through."
Right.
So how you deal with that for a kid is really important, because it's often their first experience of death, and it may be as big as the death of their grandma in that moment in time if they're five.
You're a huge hit on this program. You're a massive hit with female viewers in particular. Is that any good for you?
No, it's not.
I was just going to say, you can blame me for the first bit.
No. Well, because I live at the practice in a student bedsit, it isn't very conducive.
And you are 16 hours a day, really, aren't you?
No, more like 18.
Right.
And that's my own fault. Look, Dave, I'm not looking for a medal. I'm not whiter than white. I've made loads of mistakes in relationships, and it's not becoming for somebody to stand up and say, "Look, I'd love to have a meaningful relationship and meet Mrs. Perfect," if I haven't paid the price to make that happen. I've let people down.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my fault. It's not a whiter than white situation. I've been consumed by my vocation for 14 years right now, sleeping on the floor, you know? And I desperately want that to make a difference. But in all honesty, I hope that does happen in my lifetime. I'm 46. It's time. It's time for you to play a few tunes and make it happen for me, Dave.
All right, well, listen, I'm going to kick you out and let you go out and meet somebody.
Thanks very much.
What time is the Super Vet on and what channel?
Well, we're doing a Christmas special the week of the 15th of December. That's the next one. And then we've got either 4 or 6 episodes in March, I think, is the next one. We've just finished the last series. And then
Series 3 will happen in March.
All right,
okay,
so
very
thanks
good.
Very much for everybody that took it to their hearts.
Listen,
thank you.
There's a few more. Very quickly answer these. I have a 14-year-old West Highland dog. I bring her for a walk every day for an hour. Is it too much for her?
No.
14 years, not too much.
If she feels she's capable of it and isn't worse afterwards, carry on.
Okay. I have an 8-year-old lab retriever. She squeals in pain sometimes when getting back up to her feet from lying down. Sometimes I would gently rub the hindquarters, even back belly. She cries. Any ideas what it could be?
Yes, it's knee problems, hip problems, lower back problems. You definitely need some x-ray pictures and a bit of clinical examination by someone who knows what they're doing.
All right, okay. Now, as I finally, just in the paper this morning, as I say, the pictures of Daniel Day-Lewis. He's now Sir Daniel Day-Lewis. Seriously, they are talking about you.
Well,
they are talking about knighthood stuff.
No. It's all the awards in the world, all the professor this and professor that I've got, they'll actually mean nothing, Dave, unless they serve a purpose. And that purpose is served by this morning talking to you, genuinely.
Listen then, plain old, boring Noel Fitzpatrick.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for talking to us, Noel. Come hang
yourself.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you. Cheers. Bye.